The gospel reading this morning comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25. For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability, and then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, my good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, "Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went, and I hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you not, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to those who have more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him in the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. In the book Love Does, Bob Goff, a lawyer, an activist, a philanthropist, tells of the story of when he was in high school and he was a junior and his life was beginning to slip off the rails. He had grown disillusioned with the life all around him, and he had decided at the age of 16 that he was going to chart another course for his life. And for him, it meant leaving home and starting over. He decided to go to Yosemite National Park, where he hoped to get his life back in order, work a low-income job, and escape the realities of the life that he had. And apparently his parents allowed this 16-year-old to leave and go live in the middle of the woods, maybe the dream of many a teenage parent. I've got 2 of them. On the way out of town, he decided to stop by the home of his youth leader. And this guy's name was a guy by the name of Randy, and he was in his mid-20s, and he had come along as Bob struggled during his high school years, and he stopped by Randy's house to say goodbye and to thank him for all that he had done. And when Randy came to the door and heard Bob's story, he asked Bob if he could wait a second while he went back inside and checked on something. And a couple of minutes later, he reappeared at the door with an old backpack on his shoulder, and he said to Bob, "I'm with you." And what he meant was that he was going with him. And so they got into Bob's piece of junk of a car, and they head off to Yosemite. And after they arrive in Yosemite, despite the companionship and encouragement of Randy, who reminded him time and time again that he was with him, things didn't go as well for Bob as Bob had wished. His plan just wasn't coming together. The money didn't last as long as he had hoped. The job that he was certain that he would get, he didn't get offered. The tent that was to be his home for weeks and months got cramped. And Bob realized one morning that maybe he should go back home and re-enter high school. And he told Randy, and Randy asked, "Are you sure? Because whatever you decide to do, I'm with you." "I'm sure," Bob said. And so they headed home. When they got back to town, to Randy's house, Bob followed Randy into his home and saw in Randy's family room newly opened gifts scattered all around. "Was it someone's birthday?" Bob asked. And just as he asked this question, out from the back of the house came bounding a young woman who threw her arms around Randy and welcomed him home. It was Randy's new bride. The gifts were their newly opened wedding gifts. This woman was the woman Randy had married just the week before Bob had shown up on his doorstep. And with that, a reality hit Bob, that this youth worker and follower of Jesus, in a moment's notice, decided to spend the first week of his married life not with his bride, but to invest that first week in a young man desperately trying to find himself. Writes Mr. Goff, "What I learned from Randy changed my view permanently about what it meant to have a friendship with Jesus. I learned that faith isn't about knowing all the right stuff or obeying a list of rules. It is something more. Something more costly because it involves being present and making a sacrifice. Perhaps that's why Jesus is sometimes called Emmanuel, God with us. I think that's what God had in mind, for Jesus to be present, to just be with us. It's also what he has in mind for us when it comes to other people." The Apostle Paul writes, "Let love be genuine. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all." The past 5 weeks, we have been working through this stewardship campaign in this church. We've been talking about what it means to live generously, and in the midst of this, we hope that you have been encouraged to think about ways that you might be able to love generously. We have also encouraged you to give generously and to support the ministry of this church. And last week, we had our pledge dedication Sunday, where we brought our pledges forward and placed them on the communion table. And we hope that members of this church will support the ministry of this church in this mission in a financial means. And we immediately follow this up with the lectionary reading for this week, being one in which a lot of translations translated as bags of gold being invested. But that's not the way that the NRSV translates it. The NRSV talks about these being talents. Talents being invested, which causes me to wonder if we are missing so much of what Jesus is trying to teach, if we only think of this in terms of money. Is it possible that talents can actually be talents? Skills which we possess, abilities that God has given to us to invest in others. What if the true talents weren't financial at all, but as Paul says in Building True Community, that it is genuine love and blessing or rejoicing and weeping? What if the talent is humility and associating with those who have less than what we have, or figuring out how to live peaceably with others? That when we invest in these things, it is then that the return on the investment comes as lives are changed and the kingdom of God expands. You know, I think that Paul got it. Paul the Apostle. We first meet Paul when his name is Saul, a man firmly established in his own opinion and his position. By God's grace and by the ministry of the church, had his mind taken from the rigidity of his Pharisaic worldview to this incredible 180-degree turnaround and a renewal of his mind in order to see that faith was not about knowing all the right stuff and following a bunch of rules. That there was this new reality, a reality of love. Let love be genuine. Let it be the real deal. Let love not just be a nice thought or a distant aspiration. Rather, let love be something that you do, something that you invest in other people. Maybe this got emblazoned in Paul's mind when right after his Damascus Road experience of hearing the voice, of getting knocked down, maybe this got etched in his mind when, blinded by the light, he was taken by his fellow travelers on into Damascus, and he was ushered into a home where he sat blind and unable to eat. Maybe something happened to the Pharisee when a knock came to the door, and they told him that someone by the name of Ananias a follower of Jesus, had come to lay hands on him for his healing, to invest in Saul. Excuse me? Am I not the enemy? Does he not realize that I have the ability to arrest him, to kill him? Perhaps, they said, but he just wants to sit with you. He just wants to bless the one who persecutes him. He just wants to anoint you. He wants to come alongside of you. And Luke tells us that the disciples of Damascus sat with Saul for days. Maybe it's what was etched in Paul's mind when he wrote to the Romans, "Let your love be genuine." Or maybe it was days later after the disciples helped Paul escape from Damascus, and he's shuffled off to Jerusalem where he meets the apostles there. But the apostles were skeptical and afraid, wondering whether or not this was a trap. And Luke tells us again that one named Barnabas, the son of encouragement, came and he stood alongside of Paul when public opinion was swinging against him. And he vouched for him. And he said to the frightened apostles that he had seen the Lord and had already begun to tell of the good news and now desires to live peaceably with the disciples. And who's to know what stories came to mind among those apostles of all the times that Jesus did the exact same thing? All those times when he seemed to reach across the divides that nobody else was interested in reaching over. All those divides erected by the religious world. And he showed the disciples what genuine love looked like. He showed the disciples how to invest in one another. You remember the stories, don't you? When he sat with the woman at the well and talked about the living water with the Samaritan woman who had no water in her bucket. "I have water for that bucket," Jesus said. Living water. "How is it that you, a Jew, can be talking with me, a woman from Samaria?" Yet Jesus invests in this woman. Or the woman deemed unclean by the law due to her 12 years of bleeding reaches out to Jesus and touches him, which of course makes Jesus unclean as well, but it is by this unclean touching that this woman is made well. Let your love be genuine. Or how about that poor Gentile woman who wants Jesus to heal her sick daughter? "Oh, but I can't," Jesus said. "You have to be a Jew. You got to be on our side." "Oh, for heaven's sake," says the desperate woman. "We're talking about a human being here, my daughter, Rabbi. Doesn't your God care?" And at the risk of certain charges of heresy, Jesus reaches across the divide and says, "Your faith in the God who cares about human beings has made your daughter well. Let love be genuine. Invest in others." And how could those disciples have forgotten about that night when literally all hell was breaking loose? And Jesus was gathered with his disciples in the upper room, and he knows that everything is unraveling. 3 years of gospel preaching and teaching, it's all coming undone by denial and betrayal and abandonment. And John tells us that the Father had put all things into Jesus' hands. All power had been given to him. I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting with a bunch of measly disciples who have no backbone, and I know that one is about to pull the plug on me, and I've been given all power and permission to do whatever I want, I'm not really thinking about love. But John tells us that Jesus, having loved his own who were in the world, loved them to the end. He invested in them to the end. And instead of calling down judgment on those disciples, he took a bucket of water and he took a towel and he began to wash their feet. Where is the justice? Where's the discipline? Where's what's coming to them? Where is the setting them straight? And we are reminded from these 11 remaining disciples who were loved by Jesus and the newly converted one, Paul, that they buried not their talents. But from these 12, the return on investment grew. as they shared what they experienced, and that love expanded out and established the way for the beginning of the church. Paul to the Gentile regions of the Roman Empire, and the other disciples in Jerusalem and to the ends of the earth, so that we today may become children of that promise. For we who would choose to follow Jesus, for we who would be transformed, we who have been exhorted for our love to be genuine, know that we have been given talents. Might it be good for us not to bury them, but to invest them in a hurting world, to walk alongside of those who hunger and thirst, those who need the hourly, the daily, the monthly attention of a brother or sister. No questions asked. If you are thirsty, have something to drink. If you are dirty, then be cleaned. If your wounds are deep, let me heal you. If you are hot, be cooled. If you are an enemy, know that love is more powerful than hate. Allow me to invest myself in you. What might your investment look like? Maybe it's helping out in one of the soup kitchen opportunities in this church, or making sandwiches on one of the sandwich evenings. Maybe it's thinking about becoming a Stephen minister and learning how to truly walk with another who is hurting. Maybe it is becoming a helper in the youth program to walk alongside a student who is trying to find themselves, or a leader on the Pittsburgh Project trip, or an advisor in the church choir tours, or maybe it is teaching Sunday school, or sitting in the nursery holding little children. Maybe it's reaching across the divide of disagreement, and though we might disagree, we choose to offer grace. I don't know what it might be for you, but the worst thing, according to Jesus, is that you would bury your talent. On November 30th, there will be a second dedication Sunday here. The stewardship committee is developing an opportunity for each one of us to make a second pledge to this church, a pledge to donate our time, to invest in this church in some way beyond a financial commitment. What might it be for you? How might you invest your talent? How might you strive to hear those sought-after words of Jesus, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Well done." The only way, according to Jesus, is to be invested. Amen.